All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I am giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons 27-7 win over the Dallas Cowboys in week 10 of the 2017 NFL season.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Okay, guys, we're back to with a surprising win. Certainly, from my perspective, surprising. Maybe from your perspective, not so much. But before we get into that performance, strong performance from the Falcons today, let's talk about the fact that we're giving away a free Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. I would stay tuned, if I were you, to the end of this episode and find out all the details to how you can win that Pro Football Focus Edge subscription later on. I said that it was very ominous when I said that. If I were you, I would stay. No rants today, guys. Falcons are 5-4, strong performance in a sort of must-win game against a playoff contender in the Cowboys at this point in the season. Of course, you know, the Falcons would have their best game of the year, arguably. I would certainly argue it. Maybe the Green Bay game was better, but certainly their second best at the very least. Performance on, you know, the week after I pretty much gave up on the season and spent the last week of podcasts informing you guys how much I was ready to give up on the season. But it does go back a little bit to that Monday show that we had, or Tuesday show, I'm sorry, that we had last week with Mike April from Rise Up Reader, and he talked about some of the quotes he heard within the locker room from the Falcons, and particularly some of their defensive players coming off of that Carolina loss. And, you know, on Tuesday or Monday night when I recorded the podcast, I felt, yeah, you know, maybe the Falcons haven't closed the door completely. Maybe I shouldn't close the door completely on the Falcons. And they came out this week and looked like, oh, you know, they were had every right to be, you know, that confident coming off of that loss and not feeling down in the dumps by any means. This is a big confidence boosting win to sort of come out and you know, last week again, talking about how you don't feel down on your season being at 4-4 and still feeling confident that you can get this thing going, and to sort of come off of this 3-game road stand and have this sort of dominant performance at home to start off basically the second half of their season, you know. 4-4 in the first half, but you know, obviously you want to try to get to 5-3 or 6-2, if not better, in the second half of the season. This is exactly the way that you want to start it to get that ball rolling. Not the strongest start for the Falcons offense today. It was sort of crazy to see the team get things going in the third quarter of all times offensively, scoring their first third quarter offensive touchdown this season, I think it was. I think their only touchdown prior to this was in the week 2 game against Green Bay, and that was a defensive touchdown from Desmond Trufant. They also closed out the second quarter with a strong offensive possession in their 2-minute offense and sort of didn't skip a beat, carried that momentum into the third quarter. You know, I was surprised to see the Falcons offense get things going with Devontae Freeman being out. He suffered another concussion. It was interesting to see Thomas Davis tweet during the game after Freeman was taken out of the game that Freeman had actually been concussed the previous week before and it wasn't diagnosed by the team officials. I'm sure that's going to create some hullabaloo. Of course, Thomas Davis didn't have, I was going to make a UGA joke. I'm sorry, guys. I know it's still fresh. I won't go there. You know, so, but once Devontae went out, I certainly was sitting there very pessimistic. Oh, here we go. Like, because, you know, I said on the Friday preview episode, I'm like, I think Devontae really needs to carry the offense this week because I don't know if Julio is going to, and the Falcons really need to get their running game going. But Tevin Coleman definitely stepped up, finished the game with 83 yards on 20 carries and a touchdown. You even got some Teron Ward with a nice couple of runs there, finished with 23 yards on 9 carries. You know, I don't know if I said this on the Friday preview episode, but I was certainly thinking it at some point around Friday or whenever. So, you know, I thought the Falcons would win, or I thought the team that would win this game would be the team that wound up running the ball most effectively. And I think the Falcons proved that they were that team, particularly this past Sunday. They finished with 137 rushing yards. I think Cowboys had 107. So, you know, that if I did wind up saying that and knowing my luck, I actually didn't say, I just thought it. That was probably the only prediction I got right about this game. Matt Ryan had a strong performance. You know, he saw a pretty healthy amount of pressure early on. And I think one of the reasons why the offense got off to a slow start was because early, particularly in the first quarter of the game, the Cowboys defensive line was really doing a very good job controlling the line of scrimmage and really sort of pushing around the Falcons offensive line. In the first quarter, the Falcons ran the ball five times for a total of minus 3 yards. Ryan was sacked and hit two other times in the second quarter. Ryan had an interception on the opening drive, even though that was more the fault of the wide receiver. A good defensive play by Anthony Brown. I know some people were like, he was pass interference. I didn't see it, but I don't, that stuff doesn't bother me. Like, who cares? You know, like it, they didn't call it. They didn't call it. I'm not going to sit here and cry about it, but, I'll go back and watch the tape, but, it looked like the Falcons often started getting things going because they were able to have some successful plays on early downs on some of those series, particularly in the second quarter and to start off the third quarter. The Falcons did well on third downs despite some of their issues early on. They were 6 of 9 on third downs through the first three quarters. But that opening drive, particularly in the third, they didn't have their first third down until I think like their 8th or 9th play on that series. And by that point, they were already well into the red zone. They had sort of gotten some big plays early. That includes the previous drive in the second quarter to close out the second quarter. I think on that drive, they had a reverse to Gabriel and then a big run by Coleman. And then I think in the third quarter, they had a big run by Coleman and then a big pass off play action to Julio that sort of moved, flipped the field for them. And, you know, that goes back to something you guys heard me say 1,000 times, you know, big plays, that's where you matter. But, you know, after that big play to Julio, then the offense sort of got bogged down a little bit. But I thought, you know, there was another, that third down that did come on that drive. Ryan did a good job stepping up in the pocket, hitting Gabriel on the leaping grab. And then a couple of plays later, Hardy ran a really nice route in the back of the end zone to get the touchdown catch. You know, and people are sleeping on Justin Hardy, but that, I'll save that rant for another day. Before I get into that rant, let's talk about next week's action. If you want to stay up on everything going on with that football team up in the Pacific Northwest, you guys should check out host Grant Goldberg and Spike Freeman on Locked On Seahawks, wherever podcasts can be found. Following that Hardy touchdown, the Falcons, got a 17-7 lead. Gabriel got another big play on the next series to help set up the next Falcon score. You know, our guest on Friday, John Owning from FanRag Sports, talked about how sort of Anthony Brown was sort of vulnerable to those in-breaking routes, and we wondered if Gabriel would be able to get things going. And we've been saying that constantly this year about, like, Gabriel's getting these favorable matchups, be it partially because Sark doesn't know how to use him, partially because teams are being much more effective jamming him at the line of scrimmage, and other reasons, Matt Ryan missing throws, whatever. Gabriel really hadn't had a big game yet, and this was probably his best game today. I don't know if statistically it was, but certainly it seemed like the Falcons found a way to get him going, and it wasn't even Anthony Brown that he beat on that in-breaking route for that 34-yard play. It was Jordan Lewis. So it was nice to see sort of the Falcons getting him involved and making him, you know, making this offense feel more like a triple threat. 17 points off of their first three second-half possessions. Amazing stuff from the Falcons offense. We've missed this type of Falcons offense all year long. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of other people out there going like, see, the Falcons offense clicks because of whatever, or this thing that I've been saying all year long that they needed to do, and they did it, and then finally I feel vindicated, and like, I'm not even going to go there. Like, I don't even know what got the Falcons offense clicking this week. That sort of speaks to what's going on with the season, where it's just like, why aren't they, what is broken about this offense? And, you know, I know some people have been arguing particularly this past week, that there's nothing broken with the Falcons offense, but I would beg to disagree, because today was drastic, night and day different than what we've seen from this offense pretty much the last six games. And you know, so something was broken the last 6 weeks. But it seemed like it was a combination of good play calling, execution, better mid-game adjustments. Sean Lee getting hurt, you know, all of the above. But, it, you know, how they did it, who knows? Frankly, I don't care. As long as they do it again next week against Seattle, and then the week after that against Tampa Bay, and then the week after that against Minnesota, you know, and just can sort of build off of this momentum, ultimately, we don't need to figure out how it's happening. As long as they just keep doing it, and then we can just sort of proclaim it as magic, like we kind of did last year with the Shanahan and whatnot. Flipping to the opposite side of the ball, I think the Falcons defense had probably its best performance. Yeah, of course, they had their, I was sort of sitting here like, probably, no, of course, it was by far their best performance of the year. Not even a conversation about what could have possibly been, you know, like, you can make an argument for maybe two other three games and what's in second place, but it's a distant second place. You know, and you talk about the third quarter stuff, the Falcons defense definitely came out at halftime looking awful, responding to the offense's momentum in the complete opposite way. The Cowboys were able to move the ball 58 yards on six plays to start their third quarter offensive drive, got the ball down to the Falcons 12. 52 of those 58 play yards came on runs. 47 of those came from Alfred Morris, including one where he was basically airlifted by his own offensive lineman and was Peter Pan. Looked like Peter Pan just being carried down the field. I was cracking up watching the replay of that where his feet were completely off the ground and he was just like striking that little Peter Pan pose. You know, when you see the old school plays when he's flying around the stage and whatnot. That's what it looked like. But it was interesting, outside of that one series, the Falcons certainly shut down Alfred Morris in the Cowboys' run game. He had just 6 yards on seven carries. I think Dak finished with like 42 yards or something like that. And so he did give the Falcons some fits on Sunday. But, you know, I credit to the Falcons' run defense for finally showing up, you know, for like, what, the third time this year. But I know certainly starting that drive off, it was just like, oh, God, here we go again. Just the one time our offense gets things going, of course our defense is going to completely crap the bed and just let the Cowboys just march down the field, just running the ball. Morris getting like 11 yards a pop pretty much. But then the pass rush showed up, and that was really what happened throughout this game, and particularly, obviously, Adrian Claiborne. For those of you guys that didn't know, Claiborne set the franchise record with 6 sacks today. And I think I saw a stat where it was like the most sacks in a game from a single player in the NFL since 07 when OC did it. That's what someone tweeted out. I don't know if that doesn't seem right, but it does seem like there's been a while since someone had, you know, I think there was an Antoine Odom game that was like a 6 sack game a couple of years ago, but I think that was much longer than 07. That was like maybe 05 or something like that. But anyway, I'm getting bogged down on tangents. But yeah, on that third quarter drive from the Cowboys, Claiborne came out and sort of got a sack, and that sort of shifted the momentum back in the Falcons' defensive favor as opposed to the Cowboys. And that was, I think, his fourth sack of the game. And the Cowboys wind up settling for a field goal after that point, and they missed it. And then that gave the Falcons probably, I think, was actually their best field position of the game, other than maybe the sack strip that Claiborne had at the end of the second quarter. But they only had like one, you know, they had like 8 seconds left on the clock. So that wasn't a real series. But yeah, that drive started off at their own 28. And, you know, that speaks to sort of the issue that's been plaguing the Falcons with poor field position. They've been awful in terms of, I think they're dead last in sort of starting field position on average, given certain parameters. I don't even know if it's overall or if it's like in certain situations, but certainly I remember seeing a stat where they're dead last in starting field position. I think in the third quarter, but it might also be overall. And then so that missed kick gave the Falcons good field position, relatively good, you know, starting at your 28 is nothing. It's like a touchback and a 3 yard run on first down. But, you know, they were able to turn that into a score. That was the drive with the big Gabriel catch for 34 yards. Hooper then followed that up with a big catch to start the fourth quarter that got the ball down to the goal line. Then he sort of capped it off on the next play with a tight end rollout. You guys know, if you're longtime listeners of this podcast, or at least people that follow me on Twitter know, every now and then I'll tweet about how the tight end rollout is the perfect goal line play. It's really the only play you ever have to call in the red zone in the goal line situation. You stack the line of scrimmage. You sell out for the run. You get the defense to sell out against the run. You run that bootleg. You hit tight end, you know, fakes a block and then rolls out to the back corner of the end zone. He's open every time. Washington ran it on the 1 o'clock game. I was watching that game in Minnesota, and the only reason it didn't work was because Vernon Davis dropped it. You know, and it's just one of those plays that works every time. They hit it with Hooper. They should do it every single. It would be my go to play on first and goal at inside the two or inside the three. That's what I would do. I'd be the best red zone play caller in the NFL. I'm telling you. But yeah, it was good to see the Falcons do that. And again, that's a testament maybe to the improved play calling from Steve Sarkisian, which has been awful, but has not been, you know, I would certainly say the word I would describe it is subpar this year, but that's another tangent for another day. But no, before we get back to Claiborne in the defense, before I wax poetic about the defense, I know many of you are disheartened by what's going on in the state of sports in Georgia. Fortunately, the Falcons are doing their thing, but not so much for the rest of the state of Georgia, particularly on the college football side of things. And unfortunately, I can't plug Locked On Hawks without probably disheartening you even further. But if you want to get the scoop on what's going on with your beloved Atlanta Hawks, then check out my friend Brad Rowland on Locked On Hawks over on the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network. So let's get back to Adrian Claiborne. And he sort of halted that drive in the closing seconds of the second quarter with his third sack on the sack strip. He got one a couple of series earlier in the second quarter when he was playing as a spy. It was sort of, you know, Poe had one on the series in between that one on a third down too. And he put a nasty swim move on Zach Martin. And so it was nice to see the third down defense start to turn things around in the second quarter after a pretty rocky start early in the game. You know, they had a dumb challenge by Dan Quinn was it the first series or something like that? It was just like a bad challenge. And I think, generally speaking, like when you challenge the spot of the ball, those are generally going to be bad challenges. Because we sit here and talk about officiating and how poor it is. But generally speaking, you're not sitting there saying, man, these officials don't know how to spot the ball. It's like, oh, they missed a holding call. Oh, they probably should have called a DPI or an OPI, or they're real inconsistent on what's pass interference and what's not pass interference. But they're not really off on the spotting of the ball. And so it's a rare instance where it gets overturned. And I don't even know why you did that. I mean, I guess, yeah, it would force a field goal in that situation. But at that point early in the game, I don't even know if you're like, that like we can get a stop at a force a field goal this early in the first quarter. I don't get that. But anyway, it was just a bad challenge. It was just like, you know what happened? Because there was some confusion on that particular play, not to go on too much of a tangent, but there was the line of scrimmage, the superimposed yellow line that they show on TV was off, or no, it was right, but the sticks on that orange strip that marks where the first down is on the opposite side of the field was off. It was a 1 yard off. And so it looked like he was a yard shy of that, but it was really the yellow line that was matched up with the actual sticks on the other side of the field. I don't know what side of the field the Falcons were. I want to say the Falcons were on the other opposite side away from the sticks. I could be wrong about that. I can't recall. And so Dan Quinn was basically making a judgment, or whoever was whispering in his ear in the booth was making a judgment off the wrong sticks. And so, thus, it was a dumb challenge. But that being said, after that first quarter, the Falcons' third down defense really stepped up, largely because of the pass rush and largely because of Adrian Claiborne. You know, following that bad challenge, Dak wound up scrambling for a touchdown where the Falcons looked completely discombobulated. You know, we had, two defenders? It was like Poole and who else? Was it Jones? Tracking the running back in the flat, and meanwhile Dak is scrambling untouched into the end zone to give the Cowboys their 7-0 lead to start this thing midway through the first quarter. But again, the pass rush stepped up in the second quarter. The third down defense really got their act together. You know, I'm not going to get too at Jason Garrett for not giving Chaz Green more help, at least not as much as I have been known to do in the past. If you guys were listening to the podcast last year when I went in on Gary Kubiak, the great Gary Kubiak, I should say, with his not adjusting to Vic Beasley destroying Ty Sambrello until the fourth quarter, the Cowboys at least tried to make an adjustment in the second quarter to give Chaz Green more help and chip on that side. It just didn't really work all that well because there was too many instances where they were going, you know, they were spreading the free, they were going 11 personnel, three wide receivers on third downs. And even with the chip help, like Claiborne just blowing past Chaz Green every snap. Like the first quarter, it was apparent. Like he was just blowing past him. And it was only through the sheer power of Dak getting rid of the football that he was avoiding sacks early on. But at a certain point, like I do think, you know, like again, I think you could probably get on Garrett he could have done more. He could have made a bigger effort to always put Witten on that side of the field or something like that, and done more to help Green out and chip and prevent Claiborne from getting that jump off the line. But it did seem like to me, and I'll certainly confirm this when I rewatch the tape, but it felt like to me that Dak wasn't doing a good job managing the pocket, and that led to some of the sacks. Like it seemed like he was locked in downfield, or he was getting too deep in his drops, or, you know, I don't know if they were running five-step drops or whatever they were running, but it just seemed like he had room to step up in the pocket and he wasn't doing it. That was something we talked about on the Friday show where I was skeptical of the pass rush. I knew that the Cowboys' offensive tackles were vulnerable, but my expectations were, given the Cowboys' interior offensive line, Dak would still, you know, we would have that speed rush. They'd push our guys wide. Dak would step up in the pocket and find room to run. And some of the scrambles that he had were basically examples of that. But it also seemed like to me that there were times where he had that room to run, but he didn't run. He didn't step up. He didn't slide. And he was holding on to the ball too long. And I think some of the – not to say that he was at fault for the sacks. You know, when you get beat that cleanly, like Chaz Green was getting beat, and then later on Byron Bell when they pulled Chaz Green, it's not on the quarterback. But I do feel like that could have done a better job sort of sliding and avoiding the pressure a little bit. And maybe, you know – instead of six sacks, Claiborne would have had four sacks or something like that, you know? And maybe that would have given their offense a little bit better chance on a couple of those series. But, yeah, so, like, I can't put it fully on Garrett and Green to the same degree. Like, it was abominable against Denver last year. It was like, are you serious? Like, you're going five-man protections, and it's very clear that one of these guys can't handle the guy. The Cowboys were doing six-man protections, but it wasn't enough. Or at least it seemed like they started to do six-man. Maybe they abandoned it. I don't know. Again, I'll rewatch the film. Yeah, so going back to Claiborne. Interesting tidbit. He had six sacks today. He wound up making $500,000 based off of what Jason Fitzgerald of Over the Cap was tweeted out after the game. Claiborne has sack incentives in his built into his contract, and the benchmarks are he gets $250,000, $250,000 if he gets six sacks. It jumps to $750,000 if he gets eight sacks. It's $1.25 million for 10 sacks, $2 million for 12 sacks. So essentially, he had two sacks going in today. The six jumps his total, completely leapfrogs that $250,000 to the $750,000. So he made $500,000 today. So kudos to him, you know. Someone tweeted, I think it was Stephen Brooklyn, tweeted that, you know, maybe Claiborne should buy Chaz Green a nice Christmas gift. Because, yeah, use that, yeah, you know, kudos to you, Chaz Green. You, it was a $500,000 payday. Adrian Claiborne got thanks to you and Jason Garrett and Dak Prescott. So buy them all three Christmas gifts this year. You got the money. So, you know, that says we know that the Tyron Smith injury had a huge impact on this game. You can argue it was the most important thing that happened on Sunday, even more so than the Zeke injury. Obviously, the Cowboys' run game was not that effective outside of that one drive without Zeke. Look, I know there's going to be plenty of people that are going to sit here and say the injuries ruined the game for the Cowboys. And I know there's going to be a lot of Falcon fans that are going to be like, oh, no, man, they're just making excuses. No, it's true. The injuries did ruin the game. There's no doubt about it that the Cowboys really missed Tyron Smith and Zeke Elliott today. But, you know, the Falcons deserve all the credit in the world for taking advantage of those injuries, right? That's what good teams do. You know, when you have a clear mismatch, take advantage of the mismatch. We talked about this last year with Vic Beasley. When you're facing a backup offensive tackle, I expect you to dominate him. Now, not always to the point of getting six sacks in a game, but if you're not going to get six sacks, you should get six hurries, or, you know, you should get, you know, two sacks in six hurries, or two sacks and three hits, and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But it was interesting to me sort of watching the game, and even though those injuries, we knew those injuries were going to impact the game, I still, you know, you guys know, and I know you guys, I wouldn't have been fooling you by saying otherwise. I did not expect the Falcons to win this game, even with those injuries. I thought the Cowboys would come in and even without arguably their two best players, would still manage to sort of control this game. And if you actually watch the first quarter and a half, that looked to be the case. The Cowboys clearly controlled the game. They were winning the game on along the line of scrimmage, and Dak was playing well in those first 22, 23 minutes of the game. But then it flipped, and, like, you know, what the catalyst was, I have no idea. I don't even know if there was one, but it seemed like once Poe got that sack, once he beat Zach Martin, after that point, that play began what was a huge momentum swing for the Falcons, and the Falcons never looked back, and they controlled the rest of the game. It was similar. It basically, the opposite of what happened last week against Carolina happened, where the Falcons controlled the game early, but then, like, in the second quarter, it flipped, and the Carolina controlled the game the rest of the game. So, kudos to the Falcons for not, you know, letting Dez Bryant get open late and almost drop a surefire game-winning touchdown or something. But anyway, this is the first game this season, other than the Green Bay game, where this Falcon team looked like the 2016 team. Looked similar to the 2016, you know. The 2016 team probably would have put up, you know, 34 points or something like that. But, hey, whatever. And look, you know, I've been one that's been saying, like, we probably should stop comparing the two teams. I've certainly said that many times, but you can't help it. It's too easy to make. So, but it was nice to see that at least once this year. You know, we saw it once in the first eight games. We might only see it once in the last eight games, but at least for the time being, without knowing what's going to happen over the next seven games, it was nice to see. And hopefully we can see more games like this over the next seven. And we don't get a situation like we saw in the first eight games where they started strong and then sort of petered out. And hopefully this isn't another strong start and then we're going to watch this team peter out. You know, the competition is tough. But this is a big confidence boosting win, I think. And even though I am the nitpickiest of all the nitpickers, there's not too many negative things I can say about this game. You know, we'll see what the rest of the season happens, but it's not going to be an easy run of games. You got the Seattle game coming up, and I know everybody's like, oh man, we're going to take care of Seattle because they're all beat up. But my whole thought process is like, they need to beat Dallas before we start worrying about Seattle. You know, they need, this is kind of, you know, as I said at the top of the show, it's kind of a must win. So we shouldn't be counting our chickens before they hatch and whatnot. So now that this particular chicken hatched, we can count that one. And so we'll see if they can sort of carry this momentum on the road in a tough environment. And even though Seattle is certainly not at full strength because of the injuries they've been suffering this year, that's still a game that they can win, you know, given some of the issues that we've seen this year from the Falcons. So, you know, I've been a Falcon fan far too long to start talking about, you know, whether this team is going to be there in January. There's a lot of football left to be played. But this for the first time, really since the halftime of the Lions game, or really, honestly, to the Green Bay game, so the first time in at least 7 weeks, this Falcon team actually looked like a playoff team today. And so that's a positive. That's a positive. Only negatives I can say, and you guys know I couldn't go this entire show. I can't go 30 minutes without nitpicking at least a couple of times. I've already nitpicked a couple of times, Dan Quinn challenging and whatnot. But there's a couple other nitpicks I got to say, because I'm a negative person and I'm dead inside. But Jason Witten, man, he was putting Devondre Campbell through the first grade, wasn't he? He was schooling him. You know, Witten's a wily veteran, knows how to run routes and whatnot, but it was disheartening to see sort of him creating all that separation against Campbell. He was their leading receiver today. And so, I gotta, my boy Devondre Campbell, I gotta call him out whenever I get the opportunity. Cole Beasley gave Brian Poole some fits, not to a huge degree because Beasley only had two catches on three targets, but it did seem like it was a couple of instances where he got the better of Poole, and had the Cowboys been able to gain some offensive momentum, if their offensive line had been able to play better, I think that could have been a bigger problem. But this was something we kind of talked about back in August when Jalen Collins got suspended, because it was like Beasley's the type of receiver that typically gives Brian Poole a lot of trouble. Those sort of quick Wes Welker types. We saw it with Amendola in the Super Bowl. I think Poole brought it in the run support. So even when he makes mistakes in coverage and you're like, he brings it in run support. I think generally speaking, Brian Poole has had a good season and certainly made improvements from last year, because he was a huge question mark for me personally heading into the season. I don't really have that many questions about him. We'll see what he does against Baldwin next week. We'll see, Humphreys the week after that. We'll see if he gets a lot of opportunities against Stephon Diggs the week after that. So it's not as if it's going to be easy. You got Snead coming up as well. So we'll see. But other nitpicks, what else? I talked about the mobility of Dak given the Falcons' problems, but it's frustrating. It's only frustrating to me because we have these fast athletic linebackers, and the whole point of having these fast athletic linebackers is that when we play zone, we can run around and hit people. Like, that's the entire philosophy behind having these guys. And unfortunately, we can't do that because Dak seems like every time we, so we got Russell coming up. So we'll see how if they improve, they've already struck out three times. So they get an extra swing at the bat against Russell, I guess. And then we got Cam later on, but, come on, man. Like, we'll see, we'll see how Wilson does next week. He won't be playing behind Chaz Green. Dwayne Brown didn't get hurt on Thursday night, did he? I can't remember. Seahawks are so beat up. He might have gotten hurt. It would have been like the fourth most important injury that happened to them. Other nitpicks, Andre Roberts continues to be the bane of many people's existence. Not so much me, because I don't care. But field position, man, killing us. But yeah, I'll say some positives. I'll balance it out. Yeah. Spent 5 minutes nitpicking, so I'll whatever the opposite of nitpicking is. So we got to see some power football. Pardon my awful pun, but Don Terry Poe got some work at fullback in the goal line. Derek Coleman had some nice blocks late in the game. It was nice to see the fullback being back involved in this Falcons offense again, even if it's not a true fullback. Brooks Reed had the 7th sack of the game. Brooks Reed, last I checked on the Pro Football Focus metrics, but like on a per snap basis, Brooks Reed is like the most productive pass rusher we have. Like, this dude needs to get more work, man. The Falcons won the turnover battle. That's a positive step. They had an early interception from True wiped out because of the offsides penalty on Beasley, which, we were all sitting there like, oh, here we go. Classic Falcons. They get a turnover, and of course it gets wiped out by a penalty. But, I thought other positives they had, all five of the team's main receivers had strong games, Julio, Sanu, Gabriel, Hardy, Hooper. I thought all their guys in the secondary played well, even though I nitpicked Poole a little bit. Again, I thought he balanced things out by playing very well in run support, which he always does, part of my negativity. But he's our second best linebacker after Keanu Neal, if you ask me, but I'll let that one go. Look, no, I'm not going to let it go because I'm going to talk about it right now. I hop on the linebackers constantly. I don't think they're that good. I don't think they're as good as they get hyped up to be, like from particularly within our fan base, but also from without. Like, I think Deion Jones is a good player, but I think people talk about him like he's like this world-class linebacker. And I'm like, he's like the 15th best off-ball linebacker in the NFC. Like, y'all talk about him like he's the 15th best linebacker to play the game in the last 15 years. I know that's an exaggeration, but it is one of those things where it's just like, yeah, he's like a top 30 linebacker off-ball if you throw out the Von Millers of the world that rush the quarterback for a living. But yeah, like, he's fine, but like, it's not like amazing or anything like that. But I bring that up only because I think this game illustrated sort of what I've concluded because of my skepticism about the linebackers is when the defensive line takes over these games, the Falcons defense does well. We saw that against the Jets. They stopped the run because they were able to control the line of scrimmage against a bad Jets offensive line. You could certainly say they were able to control the line of scrimmage in the passing game because of question marks at the on the Cowboys offensive line on the outside. Leo Collins didn't have a great day. He got beat a number of times cleanly by Beasley and the like as well. You guys know, long-time listeners to this podcast know I'm harsh on the defense. I'm hard on the defense. I think when your head coach is Dan Quinn, and he's a supposed defensive guru, it frustrates me to see the silly and stupid and mental errors that this defense makes when the whole point of the defense is to simplify things that, so that you don't have to do a lot of thinking. But, you know, I always feel like, I know there's a lot of people out there that are like, see, I told you the defense is good. And I'm like, you know, you didn't tell us anything because you've been talking about how the defense has played well all year long. And this game was clearly light years better than any game we've seen this year. So you just keep saying it over and over again. And eventually they'll prove you right, I guess. To me, it's like people keep claiming this defense is good because they only give up X number of points or they rank somewhere in this statistical category that in this instance I'm using it means everything about what really paints the full portrait of this defense. And I'm just like looking at it like, what is the thing that this defense does well, guys, that makes them a good defense? Like, if you're a good defense, don't you have to do something good? Like, and they don't stop the run. They don't rush the quarterback. They don't create turnovers. So what is this thing that they do good that makes them a good defense? And now, like today, they actually play like a good defense because what did they do? They stopped the run. You know, other than that one series from Alfred Morris and Dax mobility, they were able to stop the run. They really did shut down the Cowboys' run game today, right? And they certainly rushed the quarterback good today. And so they created turnovers. Good. So today, this is what a good defense does. So I'm sitting here like, you know, not to go in too much of a rant, but it's like, you know, the Falcons' defensive success probably had everything to do with the Cowboys missing arguably their two best players in Zeke and Tyron Smith. But a good defense should be able to take advantage of that. And I think we haven't really seen this defense do that throughout this season. When we've had opportunities to take advantage of weaknesses on teams, other teams, we don't ever exploit those weaknesses. And so, like, this is what I'm talking about when you got to check these boxes. And so if we could get this type of performance for 8 to 12 games a year, then I would certainly have no problem with people labeling the defense good. But, like, again, this is like an outlier. And I don't mean that in the sense, like, this is the only game they're going to play well. But certainly over the 9 games we played this year, like, there's maybe only been like 2 games like this the entire year. And so, like, you know, maybe this means that the defense will come together over the next 7 weeks. If I sound skeptical on that, you know me. But it's one of those things where it's like, yes, positive performance for the defense. This is what a good defense does. You know, like, this is how a good defense should look all the games. So my expectation now is like, okay, let's see if we can carry this over. You got a Seahawks team next week that has a lot of question marks on the offensive line. That should bode well for our defensive line taking advantage, right? And so, you know, they don't have that much of a, you know, they seems like they're what, on the like 12th string running back, it seems like. J.D. McKissic might carry the ball 15 times next week. So it's one of those things where it's like, take advantage, be good, you know? So, yeah, I mean, that's all I have to really say about that. So, like, again, positive performance. If I don't sound enthusiastic, I was very enthusiastic on the heel during the second half of this game. It was very nice to see a good second half performance from this Falcon team. We'll see if they can sort of build off of this momentum going into next week, taking on a Seahawks team on the road. But certainly a positive development for the Falcons. Hopefully they maintain it. Hopefully I'm not back on this podcast a week from today saying, oh my God, this team is the worst. Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully we can get this season going back on track. And if for all you guys that was like, Aaron, you're too negative, you're a bandwagon fan, you're whatever, you know, you don't deserve this team and or whatever. And like, you're right. I don't deserve this team. I'm a good person. I don't need to have this heartache in my life. But today the Falcons came through for us and myself as well. So we'll take it. And we'll be back tomorrow to talk more in depth about this game. And we'll be back on Wednesday to talk more about the All-22, what we saw in film. If you have specific questions that you want me to dig into the All-22, I am certainly more than willing to do so this week. And if you did not know, if you haven't, you weren't listening last week, we do have a website, LockedOnFalcons.com. I published it on Friday afternoon. If I don't answer your question on that Wednesday show and that All-22 review, then you can certainly check out the leftovers, as I'm now going to start calling them, on Friday or Saturday, depending on how much time I have during the week to write them up and depending on how many questions we get this week. But, yeah, my goal is to sort of limit those shows to 30 minutes probably 45 minutes. We're pushing, you know, this is probably my longest rapid reaction of the season that didn't include a rant, or at least a long-term rant. But, you know, I can't keep tangent. I'm going on weird tangent, and this is what drags out these episodes. But yeah, the point is trying to do tighter, shorter shows that it don't have me meandering throughout these conversations like I'm doing right now. But that's the plan. And so send in those questions. If you want to get those questions in, you can tweet at me at FalcFans. Better yet, tweet directly at the show. Then I know it's specifically a podcast question that you want answered on the podcast, or a comment you have about the podcast, or a suggestion or a criticism or whatever. The show's Twitter handle is Locked On Falcons. If you don't like the character limits that Twitter imposes on us all, you probably don't like that they're at 280. That might be too many characters for some of you. But anyway, there's no character limits in email. That's LockedOnFalcons@mail.com is the email address. Facebook also has no character limits. That is Locked On Falcons on Facebook. Give us a like while you're there. Again, LockedOnFalcons.com is the website. You can leave a comment there as well as FalcFans.com. That's where the show is posted daily also. That's it, guys. You know, Pro Football Focus giveaway, of course. I almost forgot about it. Got too far. For those of you that are curious about the Pro Football Focus giveaway, we give away a Pro Football Focus Edge subscription every week on this show to anybody that goes to Locked On Falcons on iTunes, gives us a 5-star review, and leaves their Twitter handle in the review. No, it doesn't mean that you automatically get one, but you get entered in for one random winner that does that to get a Pro Football Focus Edge subscription at the end of each week. So what you get with the Pro Football Focus Edge subscription, you get player grade, snap counts, position rankings, fantasy projections, tools and charts. Yeah, I said it right. Tools and charts, draft coverage, all that type of stuff from Pro Football Focus certainly will help you out in your fantasy football. I was already checked out of the Falcons season last Friday. I was talking fantasy football on Friday's podcast. And Pro Football Focus has helped turn me around my fantasy football season, because I was like, oh, Falcons aren't making the playoffs, but I can make the playoffs in fantasy football. So that's what I was hoping on. Of course, Alfred Morris let me down. I deserved it, though. You know, don't start plays against the Falcons. But anyway, that's what you guys can look forward to on the Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. Sorry for going on another tangent. That's why these shows are so long. That's it, guys. The Falcons did rise up. We are in this brotherhood together, and I hope you guys stay locked on. So I will see you tomorrow talking more about this Falcons-Cowboys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.